Jaina spotted it first. "Number one," she said. Jason pushed the button. "Number one," he repeated. The turbolift door closed, and the floor fell away as the elevator shot downward, humming as it accelerated. Jason and Jaina looked at each other in momentary terror. Then they giggled. The turbolift descent went on and on until finally the platform came to a stop. The door whisked open. Jason and Jaina stood blinking. They stepped out into the shadowy bottom levels of the forbidden metropolitan wilderness. Around them, they heard large, startled creatures clattering through the fallen debris. "It's dark," Jason said. Behind the twins, the turbolift door slid shut as the elevator reset itself and returned to the upper floors, leaving Jason and Jaina alone. Chewbacca blasted through the exhibits like a land speeder out of control. He howled and called out for the two lost children. 3PO scurried behind him, trying to keep up. "I can't see anything through these holograms," 3PO said. Chewbacca sniffed for the twins. He charged through another opening. All the shouting and chaos finally brought one of the Bothan zoo attendants. The Bothan fluffed up his white fur and flailed his arms as he tried to get Chewbacca to calm down.
"Shh! You are disturbing our other patrons. This is a quiet place for enjoyment and education."
Chewbacca roared at him. The Bothan, much smaller, stood on his pointed toes, trying to draw himself up in a laughably ineffective attempt at meeting Chewbacca's eyes.
"We never should have let Wookiees into the holographic zoo."
Chewbacca grabbed the Bothan by the white chest hairs and hefted him off the ground. He let loose a string of growls, grunts, and howls. 3PO rushed up to them.
"Excuse me, if I might be allowed to translate," the droid said. "My friend Chewbacca and I are currently searching for two small children who appear to be lost. Their names are Jason and Jaina. They are 2.5 years old."
Chewbacca roared again.
"Yes, yes, I was just getting to that. This is really something of an emergency. The children just ran off from us, and any assistance you could offer?"
Chewbacca used both hands to shake the Bothan attendant like a rag doll.
"Would be most appreciated," 3PO finished.
But the Bothan had fainted. Jason and Jaina hiked through a forest of fallen girders, orange and yellow toadstools, and lumpy fungus growing in ancient garbage. Unseen feet skittered across fallen beams and webwork structures overhead. The massive foundations of the buildings looked indestructible, overgrown with thick moss. Things moved in the shadows, but nothing came clear, even as the children's eyes adjusted to the shadowy light. Drips of warm, bad-tasting water fell around them in a slow, arrhythmic rain. Jason looked up, and the enormous buildings seemed to rise forever and ever. He could glimpse only a blurred slice of what might have been the sky.
"I want to go home," Jaina said.
The wreckage of abandoned equipment lay in piles, rusted and corroded. The twins scrambled over crashed vehicles, the hulks of discarded battleships and fighting machines, deep debris left from the previous year's civil warfare. Jason and Jaina came upon a half-collapsed wall that had once contained a computer screen. The terminal lay tilted on its side, with the screen smashed inward, leaving broken teeth of transparasteel. But the twins recognized it as a data unit similar to the ones inside their own quarters. Jason stood in front of the broken panel and put his small hands on his hips, trying to look like his father. He addressed the computer screen, and he knew exactly what to say, after having heard the bedtime story many times before.
"We are lost," he said. "Please help us find our home."
He waited and waited, but received no response. No lights illuminated the panels. He heard no answer from the torn speaker unit, where glistening black beetles had made a nest. Jason sighed. Jaina took his hand, and the two turned around as they heard a slithering sound down the cramped alleyway. A formless gray-green creature paused behind them, a granite slug with two eyes protruding on gelatinous stalks, as if assessing the two children. As it moved, it scoured green sludge off the cracked duricrete alleyway, trailing thick, translucent slime. The granite slug slithered toward them, and the twins backed away. From the bottom of the slug's underbelly, a jagged crack opened up, a quivering, lipless mouth that sucked in a long, hollow whistle of air. Jaina stepped up to it. It was her turn this time.
"We are lost," she said. "Please help us find our home."
The granite slug reared until it towered over the little girl. She blinked up at it. Jason stood by her side. Then the granite slug seemed to deflate again, hooked its body into a broken passage to the right, and landed on the stones with a wet slapping sound.
A rustle of wind suddenly kicked up, and the granite slug churned down the side alley in alarm. Jason looked up just in time to see the sharp, manta-like wings of a hawk bat that swooped down from high above, metallic talons outstretched. The granite slug attempted to burrow into the rusted debris, but the hawk bat landed on top of the wreckage, ripping and tearing at the fallen hunks of metal with its claws. Its triangular beak bobbed up and down like a piston until it had exposed the granite slug and slashed at the slimy creature. The hawk bat flapped its broad wings again, heading toward the sky with its squirming, dripping prey. Jason and Jaina looked up at the creature, then at each other. The two began trudging through the dark underworld of Coruscant again. Jaina said, "And he walked, and he walked." "We must sound the alarm immediately, Chewbacca," 3PO said. But the Wookiee seemed reluctant to admit they had lost the two small children. They left the unconscious Bothan attendant in one of the holographic dioramas, then made their way to the white-tiled corridor leading to the souvenir shops, refreshment stands, and other parts of the museum. 3PO wondered what the poor Bothan would think when he woke up lying inside the webbed lair of a cannibal arachnid from Duras. A maintenance droid finished its turbolift repairs and removed the out-of-service sign. Its two heads began humming a duet to themselves at having completed a satisfying menial task. Chewbacca pointed to the maintenance droid, but 3PO became indignant. What could a low-level maintenance droid possibly know about this situation? Those models aren't much smarter than motor vehicles. But a large Wookiee hand dragged him along. "Oh, all right, if you insist." Chewbacca sprinted ahead and stood in the path of the trundling maintenance droid. Automatic sensors instructed the droid to swerve one way, then the other, but Chewbacca forced it to stop. The maintenance droid emitted a high-pitched whine of confusion. 3PO came up behind it. "Excuse me," he said, and garbled out a long series of crude binary questions. The maintenance droid answered with a blat like a stepped-on steam whistle. 3PO repeated his question, but got the same answer. "I told you he'd be no use," 3PO said. "Maintenance droids aren't programmed to notice anything. They just do their repairs and wait for new instructions." Chewbacca moaned, shaking his big hairy head. 3PO said, "Oh, be quiet, you big walking carpet. I was not talking too much. Besides, you're the one who has the life debt to Han Solo." The maintenance droid continued, oblivious to their bickering. 3PO wished that he could simplify his own programming and be so blissfully ignorant in the ways of the galaxy. He felt his circuits overheating as the full impact of what might happen to him slammed down on his poor head. "Master Solo will probably remove my legs and make me recompile and alphabetize all the fragmented files in the Imperial Information Center." In the dim underworld, Jason pointed to a noisy machine in front of them as the cluttered street widened. "Look," he said, "droid." The children ran, waving their hands and hoping to get the droid's attention. But they stopped as the machine continued along a polished path worn through the debris. The droid was vastly older than the maintenance model up at the turbolift. It had bulkier joints, squarish limbs. Large bolts held the pieces together. The antique repair droid was little more than a mobile cart of tools with a torso, arms, and an angled hexagonal head. One of its optical sensors had fallen off. Thick cables ran down its spine and along its neck, corroded and caked with dust and dirt. Moss had begun to grow on its sides. It moved with a stuttering motion, as if desperately in need of lubricant. Along the street, a line of corroded poles stood a meter taller than the twins. Atop each pole rested an old glow crystal, engraved with magnifying facets, but each crystal was a dead translucent gray, shedding no light into the dim streets. Some poles had come loose from their ground-level moorings and tilted sideways. The repair droid worked its way to the end of the street, stopped at an appropriate position, and ratcheted its torso high on accordion joints so its arms could reach the darkened glow crystal. The droid removed the burned-out crystal, cradling it carefully in segmented pincers. After placing it in the back of the cart, the repair droid removed another thick glow crystal from an open bin. Following complex programming, the droid positioned the replacement crystal on top of the pole and activated it. The new glow crystal remained as dead and lightless as the first, but the repair droid didn't seem to notice. It moved to the next pole, repeating the process. Jason stood in front of the droid, addressing it in his best daddy voice. "We're lost," he said. Jaina came up beside him. Please help us find our home.
The repair droid ratcheted up as if in alarm, then lowered itself down to study the children with its single optical sensor.
Lost, it said in a clanking voice.
Home, Jaina insisted.
Not in my programming, the droid said. Not my main task.
It ratcheted up again and moved to a third malfunctioning glow crystal pole.
Not in my programming.
Jaina and Jason began to cry, but upon hearing each other, rather than reinforcing their tears, the twins stopped.
Be brave, Jaina said.
Brave, Jason agreed.
The two exhausted twins sat down on a time-smoothed chunk of duracrete in the middle of the open street. They watched the repair droid continue removing dead glow crystals from poles and replacing them with equally useless lights. The droid moved all the way to the end of the street, unsuccessful in getting any of the street lights to work again. Then, picking up speed, it whirred down the worn path it had traveled for 100 years back to where it had started. The droid stopped in front of the first dead glow crystal pole all over again, ratcheted itself up, and replaced the lightless crystal it had changed only a short while earlier with another one.
22.
Still reeling from the destruction of the Manticore, Admiral Dalla slumped against the bridge rail. She found herself at a loss for words as the battle on Calamari continued.
Wipe them out, she said. Open fire with all turbo laser batteries from orbit. Target every floating city.
She stared with glassy eyes out the Gorgon's wide viewport.
Destroy them all.
She couldn't understand what had gone wrong. She had followed Grand Moff Tarkin's tactics exactly. He had trained her carefully, giving her all the information she should have needed. But since Dalla had emerged from Maw installation, she had met with one disaster after another. The Sun Crusher fallen into rebel hands, the Hydra destroyed, and now the Manticore. True, she had been successful in hijacking a small supply vessel, and she had obliterated an insignificant colony on Dantooine. But now, on her first major attack against a rebel world, she had again lost a Star Destroyer through her own overconfidence. She had failed. Utterly. Beside the Gorgon, in a companion flight path, rode the Basilisk. Together they fired volleys of turbolasers into the oceans, incinerating submerged Calamarian structures. In moments, they would cross the Terminator line between day and night, where they could fire down upon two more of the massive floating cities. They would vaporize the structures, sending all the inhabitants to a watery death.
Dispatch the last TIE squadron, she said, staring at the fiery battlefield of the ocean world below. I want to lay this entire planet waste.
Admiral, Commander Kratos ran between the sensor and tactical stations and up the two steps to the observation platform. Rebel battleships have just come out of hyperspace, an entire fleet, more than we can hope to fight.
Dalla whirled in disbelief. They responded to a distress call that quickly?
Then she too saw the glinting figures of large battleships streaking like comets toward them in planetary orbit. Her breath caught in her throat. The shipyards remained unscathed except for minor sorties. She had not met her primary objective in the attack on Calamari. Still, they had destroyed at least one floating city, wrecked another, damaged two more.
Recall all TIE squadrons, Dalla said. Plot a straight-line vector through hyperspace to the Cauldron Nebula. We'll go back and reassess our tactics, determine our losses.
She paused, then raised her voice like a torch of anger.
And we'll prepare our next attack.
The TIE fighters streamed back into the holds of the Star Destroyers. The rebel defensive forces swung around in orbit like a pack of carnivores. Dalla did not dare risk fighting them, though she wanted nothing more than to rip the throats out of their commanders with her bare hands.
Ready for hyperspace, she said, before the reinforcements could swoop in to attack.
Dalla watched the star fields elongate into bright white lines that funneled into a vanishing point on the other side of the universe. Her Star Destroyers entered hyperspace, leaving the New Republic forces hopelessly behind. Han Solo and Lando Calrissian soared through the skies of Calamari in the Millennium Falcon, searching for columns of smoke rising from devastated floating settlements. They had found Foam Wander City, but when they landed on one of the emergency pads, they learned that Admiral Akbar, Leia, and Ambassador Kilgall had already departed on a rescue mission to the sunken city of Reefholm. Han, wrapped up in dismay at the devastation caused by Admiral Dalla's forces, felt no particular jubilation at being the pilot and owner of the Falcon. all exhilaration at winning his ship back had evaporated upon seeing the destruction that had been wreaked on the ocean world. Lando sat at Chewbacca's station, staring at the navigation charts. "Looks like Reef Home City should be coming up somewhere below. I detect plenty of scattered metallic masses, but nothing that might be a metropolis." "No, just the remains," Han said in a low voice. As they skimmed low, he looked out the Falcon's viewports at floating wreckage scattered on the waves. Blackened tracings of blaster scars showed prominently on the fragmented metal. Broken chunks of the floating city, sealed and airtight with flood bulkheads, remained afloat like buoyant coffins. Calamarian and Quarren rescuers swarmed over the self-contained segments, trying to break through to free those inside. "That used to look like Cloud City," Han said. "Now it looks like leftovers from a garbage masher." He pointed to a smooth chunk of Reef Home's outer shell. "Think we can set down in that section over there?" Lando gave a nonchalant shrug. "Nobody'd even notice the Falcon among all this other junk." "Hey," Han said. Lando looked at him. "She's your ship, Han. I just wish I had the Lady Luck back." Han set the Falcon down on the rocking plasteel debris, locked down the stabilizers, then broke open the door seals. As he clambered down the exit ramp, he scanned the rescuers to see if he could find Leia. He hadn't held her in his arms in so long. As usual, when they were forced apart, he thought of all sorts of things he wanted to say to her, the promises and sweet nothings she deserved, though he usually didn't manage to force them through his gruff exterior. Lando followed him, and they both stared at the wounded who had been dragged onto the floating wreckage of the Calamarian city. Although waves slashed over the metal edges, for now they had been designated infirmary areas, relatively stable platforms on which the medics could tend the injured. The smell of blood and salt filled the air, mixed with the chemical stench of laser burns, molten metal quenched in the sea, and smoke from fires that continued to burn. Tentacle-faced Quarren bobbed up from the waves. Water trickled down their heads as they brought up important components from Reef Home's computer core or personal items rescued from breached living quarters. The Quarren would no doubt claim salvage rights for the entire hulk, and they would sell personal belongings back to the Calamarians. Han stood with his legs spread wide for greater balance on a drifting fragment. The choppy sea made the platform lurch in slow motion, rocking up and down. He finally noticed a wave speeder skimming toward the wreckage. Leia piloted it, accompanied by Akbar and a female Calamarian.